What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, August 24th, the Three Fails edition. I'm Carvel Wallace. I'm a journalist and editor in Oakland, and I'm the father of Georgia, who is 11, almost 12, and Ezra, who is 14. Gabe and Rebecca are on vacation this week, but they'll be back next week. And today we've got two special guests.
I'm Allison Benedict. I'm an editor at Slate, and I live in New Jersey. And I'm the mom of Harry, who is 8, almost 9, Sam, who is 6, and Wally, 4.
And I'm Ami Cooper, hairstylist and gardener in Oakland, California. And I'm the mother of Vita, who's 17, Ari, who's 12, and Jerome, who's 8.
Today we're going to be talking to Ami about raising a trans sixth grader, and we're going to have recommendations. And in Slate Plus, we're going to catch up some more with Allison, who's here on her triumphant return. But first, triumphs and fails. Allison, what do you have for us?
My triumphant return will begin with a fail. So I was kind of loath to talk about this today, but I figured that meant that I should. Which is that I send my kids to a really awesome day camp, and every day they send pictures home, and I love combing through them at the end of a horrible day of editing crap about Trump and trying to find my kids smiling and having fun. But pretty early on, I started sort of having the impulse to share these cute pictures whenever I found my kids in one of them, and then stopping myself from sharing them because all the kids are white, and I send my kids to a camp that's basically all white. And I know that that's not a good thing for them or a good decision to have made, and that's my fail.
Wow. Wait, so are you saying that the decision to send them to this camp is what you're considering the fail, or?
Yeah. I mean, and I've made it twice. Mm. Like, I sent my, the first year we moved to the suburb, from the city to the suburbs a couple of years ago. And the first summer we moved there, my son had like a pretty terrible time at the camp we sent him to. And he had a pretty terrible first year at school, just kind of not knowing anyone. So I thought, I want to give him like the best summer camp experience I can, and my parents said they would help us out, and we found this camp that we heard was great, and most of what I knew about it is that it was really expensive and beyond what we could pay, and my parents helped us, and he went and he had a great summer, and I kind of didn't think anything about it other than like I was just so happy that he was happy. So we sent him back this summer, and this summer is when I really sort of keyed in on like this camp is not like the rest of his life, which, you know, his life is not white. We're white, and a lot of our neighbors are white, but his school is diverse. And so I guess the fail is, you know, the camp is great. He's really happy. He gets to do lots of cool stuff. We're really lucky that my parents help us and we can send him. But I think it's probably not great to send him off into this bubble every summer.
How do you address that? Do you talk about that with him? Is he of the age where that's something that you would have like conversations about, or how do you contextualize that for him?
I haven't yet. I mean, this is the first I've talked about it, actually. I mean, I've talked about it with my husband a bit, and mainly just like sort of the dawning is not the right word, because I don't want to sound like this, like I was naive and then I figured it out or something, but just this growing feeling, looking at the pictures every day, that like something's not right here. And it's not that what's not right is the me. Like, it's not that the camp is bad. It's that like I've made a decision to do a thing that I profess to be not cool with. And I haven't talked to my son about it. I guess I probably should.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, Ami, what do you think this is something you should bring up to your kid? How old is he?
He's 8, almost 9.
Uh-huh. What do you think, Avi?
Yeah, I know that's one of the biggest challenges, especially right now. It just feels like there's a lot of people looking at that, being more sensitive about diversity and what's being, how things are being perceived.
Yeah.
It's such a personal thing, and every kid is so different.
Uh-huh.
You know, like some kids are already having these kinds of discussions at that age. I know in Oakland we have a lot of, you know, curriculum built around that. So there are lots of conversations happening, but it's such a sensitive thing.
Mm.
I don't even know how you would bring it up.
Right. Right.
Without it being like super contrived.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Has your son ever asked you about this or talked to you about, like, what is your... to what extent is your son, like, race conscious?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about, you know, things that are in the news. We read books about, you know, Ruby Bridges, and, like, we try to make that not, like, this, you know, we definitely, like, race is not, like, a taboo subject in our household at all, and we talk about privilege, but I've never talked about it in terms of this camp. I mean, we have talked about it about, like, his school. We moved from Brooklyn, where he went to, you know, which was supposed to be kind of this very diverse urban life, but his school was very, very white, to a much more diverse school in the suburbs. And we've talked about that, but I haven't personalized it when it comes to camp. I think it's probably good to personalize it, actually. Like, it's not this, you know, giant historical problem only. It's like a day-to-day thing in everyone's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, thanks for talking about that. I mean, I'm sure this is a topic that we'll continue to return to on the show, as we already have. I'm going to go next, and I have a fail, which is nowhere near as large in social scale, but felt pretty weird. So listeners of the show will know that my family underwent a huge transition this summer because of the crazy housing situation here in Oakland. I always say that the real estate market is a third parent in our house because it makes as many decisions about our kids as we do. And some of you know that I lost my house back in 2016. I had this 3-bedroom. It was great. And then I rented it out on Airbnb when I was traveling. And then I got evicted. And then the landlord raised the rent by 1,000 or by 200. Or let's see, I was paying 2,000. She raised it to 4,000 after I left. And then I had to move into a smaller place, which meant that our childcare schedule was all screwed up. But my ex had this house in East Oakland, and that was going well. But then they announced that they were going to sell the house. And so my ex then was like, I can't afford, even though she makes good money and has like a real grown-up job that she's like an executive level, she still couldn't afford 3-bedroom rent in the Bay Area at the current market rates. So she ended up moving in with her boyfriend, who has a rent-controlled 3-bedroom by the lake, which is this great neighborhood that everyone wants to get into. And this guy just happens to have this 3-bedroom house. So they moved in. That's what they did in August. All of a sudden, everyone's all living together. And he's great. It's been a lot of transition for everyone, and we're just getting the hang of it. So the first day of school came along, and my daughter was Joe, my ex-wife, had to travel that week. She had to be gone on Monday for work. And so we had this plan in place, and we scheduled it. Like, I was going to come to the house and get the kids and get my daughter. My son isn't in school yet, and I was going to take her to school, first day of school and all this stuff. And Joe had her flight was like later, like mid-morning and all this. And so I set my alarm. I woke up. I drove over to the house. You know, I had just sort of connected with the boyfriend, and everything was sort of on tenuous ground, but everyone's trying to make the best of it. And I get there, and no one's at the house. Like, no one is there. And it's like 8 o'clock, and I'm supposed to like pick her up to get her to school by 8:25, and no one's there. So I text like, hey, I'm outside, and I get no response. And I'm like, what the hell? So I knock on the door, and no one answers. I'm super confused. And then at like 10 minutes later, I get a text from Joe, who my ex-wife, who was like, I thought I was taking her this morning. And I was like, I thought I was. And so she's like, we're already like halfway to school. And I was like, there was such a gut punch, because it was in some weird way symbolic of all these changes and all of this feeling of like not being able to handle everything that's happening in my kids' lives, and somehow, quote unquote, missing the first day of school was like a little thing. I mean, my daughter and I had hung out the night before. We had been texting, but somehow we just, this was a thing. And so I ended up driving anyway to my daughter's school, like treating it as a dry run so I can, because it's a new location, figuring out how long it's going to take, what the traffic patterns are and everything. And then I got there just in time. And I pulled up in front of the school and she came out with her friends and she was like, "Dad, you pulled up on me," like joking, you know. And I was like, "I just wanted to see you on your first day." And so she was like, "Okay." And she gave me a hug and I was like, "Let's take a first day selfie." So we took a first day of school selfie. And then a minute later, I ran into her mom at a cafe and we sat and talked for like 2 hours and got up before she went to the airport. So it was a fail that had a triumph at the end. But man, it's just such complicated times right now.
Wait, did you figure out like what, how the miscommunication happened? Like basically,
it was totally on me.
Okay.
It was on me. Like we had, well, it was a little bit on my daughter, like helped a little because we had together all made this plan. And then somehow my daughter and I had both gotten it wrong. So then when we made this plan on like Friday, but then on like Sunday when we were texting, she was texting me about school supplies or whatever. And then at the end of her text, she was like, "I'll see you tomorrow morning." Right. And I was like, "Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow morning. Like, I'll pick you up." So my daughter and I had agreed that I was going to pick her up, but that was not the plan that we had all set. So it was really on me. I had just spaced because, you know, I do that sometimes, but, yeah, lots going on. All right. Ami, what do you got?
All right, well, I'll keep going with the fails.
Good. 3 for 3.
Yeah, but mine's a little bit more, I think it's more general. Mm-hmm. So I think that I have this sort of dream of family life, including bike riding. Mm. And none of my kids like riding bikes. In fact, my youngest doesn't even know how. So I feel like I totally failed. You know, like they should have already, you know, experience the whole thing and be very proficient.
Right.
But they're not.
Oh.
And my two older ones know how, but they just absolutely, they abhor riding bikes. And I just feel like, man, what happened there?
Wow. Is it because it's hard? Like, is it hard to ride? Like, part of it is, like, depending on where you live in Oakland, Oakland's not that great of a bike riding city, especially for kids.
No, it's super urban where we live. So it's not the ideal place to ride your bike.
Right.
Right. But I'd make an effort, you know, to take them out to another place, a safer place.
Yeah.
That didn't have traffic so that they can ride their bikes because it seems like such a fun thing to do as a family.
Do you buy that your youngest has to learn, or you think it's like not a skill that is okay to not have?
Yeah, I just think it's such an important skill to have. I really do. I think that everyone should know how to ride a bike, even if they don't do it like all the time or whatever. But I mean, you should know.
Yeah.
But that's just, I don't know. Maybe I need to let it go. But I've met adults who don't know how to ride bikes and they have all these regrets.
Right.
You know, they're like, "Why didn't my parents teach me?" And
right.
then they cry themselves to sleep every night.
I know some adults who try, you know, learned as adults, and I think it's really hard, like your sense
it's
of balance.
Super hard.
And yeah, you overthink it.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about it. Like, I don't want to be forceful and say, you know, like, "You need to do this." And then have Jerome like hate it. Even more.
Right. Is there like zero interest on Jerome's part?
Yeah,
like,
it's just none.
It's because it's not necessary. It's not how you get around. It's not.
It just seems so scary.
Oh. How old is Jerome?
8.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like way too much going on at once.
I think you should. Yeah. I think you're not asking for advice, but I'm going to give
it to
you.
Yeah, now I am.
But we're going to give it to you.
Yeah. No, well, now. I think you should. This might be too harsh. I was also scared of learning to ride a bike when I was a kid. I think you should figure out like a day trip somewhere flat and put that on like the calendar. And then this is crazy. You're going to think I sound like a crazy person, but you can get your kid bike riding lessons so that you take the the mom pressure and like all the tension that comes between parents and kids on things like that out of it.
For sure.
And just like enroll your kid in a couple of those classes and tell him he has to, like, there's a deadline because you guys are taking this trip.
That sounds good, actually.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah,
because I mean I wouldn't have thought of that methodology, but I do think that I feel like you should probably just kind of take the reins on this one. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of where you kind of needed to do a little parental grabbing of the wheel and saying, "Look, this is going to happen."
Yeah.
You know, it's hard, but it's, yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, three failure parents altogether.
Welcome Let to us our answer. Show.
Now we're going to give you advice on how you can fail.
Come join the club.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Before we move on to our next segment, let's first do a little bit of business. First, I want to tell you about another Slate show. It's Slate XX Gab Fest. The XX Gab Fest is a bi-weekly podcast about feminism, gender, sexuality, health, politics, Beyonce, and other issues of interest to women and their friends. It's hosted by Invisibilia co-host Hannah Rosen, New York Magazine's Noreen Malone, and managing producer of Slate Podcasts, June Thomas. Last time they deconstructed Charlie XCX's Boys video, watched the new TV show The Bold Type, and talked about Google's diversity woes. Check out the XX Gab Fest wherever you get your podcasts. And we want to hear from you. If you want to ask us a question on air or leave us a voicemail at 424-255-7833, it's the best way to have us respond to your questions, and we love hearing from you. And today on Slate Plus, we get to roast Allison some more as we dig deeper into her personal fails as a parent, which will make us all feel better about what we're doing. To hear that segment, sign up for Slate Plus. Slate Plus is our membership program where fans of Slate and our podcasts help support us. For $35 for your first year, you can help cover the cost of producing these shows. And of course, in return, you'll get extended ad-free versions of the show and other great Slate shows and a ton of other great benefits. So, if you'd like to support Mom and Dad Are Fighting, go to slate.com/momanddadplus to join Slate Plus today. Okay, moving on. In our studio today, we have Ami Cooper, who is a friend of mine, someone that I know from Oakland in general, and whose daughter now is a co-student, a colleague of my 11-year-old at their middle school. And we're going to talk with Ami about her experiences parenting, at this point, a trans sixth grader. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So thanks for coming on and agreeing to talk about this. I can imagine that this has been quite a journey for you, this experience. Can you tell me a little bit about how this began for you, like how this kind of emerged for you and your family?
Where to begin? Yeah. Well, first, thanks for having me on. It's a real honor to be here. And you know, when Ari was three is when things really started.
Uh-huh.
As far as, you know, being adamant about identifying as a girl, even though she's biologically male. And at that time, I didn't know anybody who was trans, and I didn't know anybody who had trans kids. So it was all very new to me, and I thought maybe it was just something that she was playing with, you know, that it was just a phase. But it just continued where she was just very insistent on being a girl. So we were living at that time in Sacramento, and it's a definitely a more conservative part of the world. And so when Ari was about to go into kindergarten, I made the decision to move to the Bay Area so that she could go to kindergarten at a school where there was a lot more acceptance. Maybe she wouldn't be in the minority. And also because Vita, her older sister, was in school where Ari would be going to school, and everyone knew Ari as Vita's brother who wore dresses. So I guess I just didn't want Ari to have this, already have this identity as being Vita's, brother, who's just kind of weird, So we made the move to Berkeley.
Wow. You mentioned thinking it was a phase, but was there a time in which you kind of hoped it was a phase?
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's always a mixed bag, you know? It's like, I want to be this loving and accepting mom, you know? It's like, I accept you just as you are, you know? But the fear of the world and how the world was going to react is what made it really difficult for me to be accepting of it. I found myself being really overwhelmed with worry for Ari and what the future was going to bring for her. And I had hoped that it would pass and that we could just kind of return to life as usual.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of parents, I would guess, in your situation would have tried to, I don't know. I mean, probably this happened a lot in the past. Like a lot of parents would have been like, well, obviously this is, would have tried to force this out of their kid or force them into a situation where they were aligned with gender roles as expected. Mm. What kept you from doing that?
It just didn't feel right to me, There was just a feeling that I had that's not how I wanted to handle it. And not to throw Ari's, dad under the bus, because he's come a long way and is very accepting and loving of Ari now. But at that time, he absolutely was not. And in fact, said some really, really harsh things to Ari and made these rules that at his house, Ari wore boys' clothes. Mm-hmm. It created a lot of tension between our households and in our co-parenting relationship, for sure. It increased the amount of stress and anxiety that I had about Ari's well-being. Mm-hmm. And it also increased the anger and anxiety for Ari because she was feeling like she wasn't being accepted by one of her parents. Mm-hmm.
At what point did you know... Did you kind of give up on hoping that it was a phase? Did you know it is? I imagine it's not a moment, but it's a process. But like how and when did you know that this is not passing?
Around age four, right before we had to make decisions about kindergarten. I think that was kind of the pivotal moment for me, because Ari had said that she wanted to go to school as a girl. That's when I had to kind of come to terms with it not being a phase,
What was elementary school like then? How did you handle this with teachers, with the administration?
Ari, because she was younger, could pass as a girl. So no one knew. Like, we didn't disclose to everybody that she was trans, except for her teachers and the principal. Just for safety reasons, they needed to know that. And they were all really okay with it. There were a few times when there was some, I think because we're still kind of discovering things and working through some of the kinks, there were some discussions about the bathroom, which just is such a surprise to me that would even be an issue, just because, like, she clearly looks like a girl. Why would she go to the boys' bathroom? Just stuff like that. but otherwise, I found it to be really easy to navigate.
Hmm. The world struggles with this. And there are so many people who one of the arguments that I hear is that, how do you know, like, when a kid is this age, right? As though there's some kind of like a content warning on being trans, as though that's somehow like really as though it's a piece of sexual content. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, a kid can't know at that age because they're too young. They have to be 18, 19. What do you say to people? Like, what is your response as someone who is a parent to that argument?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question because that does come up a lot. It's like, how does someone so young, how could they possibly know? But I usually ask people to sort of reflect on their own experiences around that. Like when did you know that you were a boy? Mm. You know, how did you know that? At what age do you remember when you were a child that you were clearly identifying yourself as a male or as a boy? Mm. And it's usually around the age of 3 where kids start becoming really almost obsessed with gender, mm-hmm. you know, where they want to put a gender on every single thing, you know, mm-hmm. even like animals, where it's like, you know, Carlos has a penis, therefore he is a boy. Right. And so...
Carlos is your dog.
Carlos is my dog. And he does have a penis. I'm not sure about his gender, though, you know? We just haven't had that talk. But yeah, so I feel like there's that is the age where kids are exploring their own gender, the genders of other people. And so it's a natural time to start exploring what that means.
Yeah.
Thinking about you having to like answer those questions, how much of parenting is like this political act and how much just feels like life? It seems exhausting to have to, you know, field those questions mm-hmm. and have what's happening in your family be like a political debate.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely I have those moments where I'm just like, I just really don't want to talk about this right now. And yet, you know, I'm sort of expected to. I'm not going to be like the spokesperson for all, you know, parents of trans kids. I sometimes will omit information from people. I have pictures hanging up at my station of my kids and, you know, they always want to know more about them, you know? And so I have to there's a lot of times I leave stuff out, you know, because I just don't want to have that conversation. But if I feel like someone's open enough, I'll talk about it. Or sometimes someone will say something kind of alluding to like, can you believe that, you know, there's so much stuff happening about, you know, gender right now? And then I kind of have to go, okay, well, actually, you know, there are good reasons why we are having these conversations about gender. Mm. And then that just, you know, brings up a lot of questions, more questions. And I'm happy to share my experience most of the time, but there are days where I just don't want to talk about it.
Hmm. So Ari began sixth grade.
Yes.
2 days ago, mm-hmm. the same day that I failed to pick my daughter up and take her to school. and so that was her first day at a middle school in Oakland and the same middle school that my daughter's at. And mm-hmm. I should say for the listeners that yesterday they got a chance to meet my daughter and Ari, and I kind of like, we arranged this meeting before in front of the gates at school. So I told my daughter, who is like now relatively popular by middle school standards, like, look, this is Ari. This is a new person at the school. Can you just keep an eye on her and look out for her or what have you? But now that you've begun this, I guess there's two sets of questions. One is like, how did you prepare the school for Ari? And how did you prepare Ari for the school?
Preparing the school for Ari was just a kind of a brief meeting with the assistant principal, where I was actually asking questions about what's her take on the school itself, the climate of the school. Were they ready for a trans student? And were there questions about safety? Those were my main concerns. And she seemed really confident in the school community that it would be a safe place for Ari, and that because she was coming in as a sixth grader, that they work really hard to build a strong bond in the sixth grade among the students, so that they can kind of, you know, rise up together mm-hmm. in seventh and eighth grade, already having these relationships with each other and a mutual respect. So that made me feel better. Mm-hmm. The conversation with Ari, was mostly led by her because she had made a decision in the fifth grade that she really wanted to be out. Mm. She was tired of being afraid of being found out. And so she decided she was just going to let everybody know that she was trans, which, of course, is like really awesome and empowering and so exciting for me as a parent because, you know, it's like she's confident in herself and she, you know, she's just going to be who she is. Mm. And then there's the other side
Scary.
Of it, right, where it's like, yeah, where it's like, oh, my gosh, what? You know, like
right.
if you tell people, then they know.
Right.
but not wanting to show that to her because I wanted to support her decision, you know, so it's always, for us, it's always been about, you know, some people don't understand things and they say mean things or do mean things because of that. And it has nothing to do really with you. It has everything to do with their own insecurities and their own fears. And so it was kind of a preparatory conversation about the possibility that there would be people who were not accepting and that it's not because she was doing something wrong, but that they just didn't understand. They, you know, didn't have enough education about it.
Has that happened? Has she encountered that? Or to what extent has she?
So far, not yet. But, you know, she's only been out for a little while.
Yeah.
So, and it takes a while for things to circulate.
Yeah.
So it's kind of to be determined at this point.
Yeah. What is that look like for her on the first day of school? How do you come out to people in that regard? I mean, do you like announce it? Like, is that how you introduce yourself? Like, how does that happen?
I know. I was wondering that too. I don't think she's figured that part out yet.
Mm.
You know, I think it'll probably be more in one-on-one conversations with people that she meets. Ari's classmates from her previous elementary school also are going to the middle school where she goes.
Uh-huh.
And they know that she's trans. And so I just think it's a matter of time, really, where it's like this, it'll come up in conversation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How, I mean, from your perspective at least, how it's been for your other kids, and also like if you feel like you have to make an effort to make sure that they, that Ari's not at the center of, you know, of everything. I don't know if that's, if that's something that you think about.
Yeah, I think that it's been going on for such a long time now that it's just the way it is, you know? Her older sister, I think, at a younger age was really worried about Ari and her safety. And that came up a lot in our conversations. But now I think it also has helped her to have a level of consciousness around, you know, gender issues, and that she's been able to be more accepting because of Ari.
Yeah.
So this is such a thing to go through, and it's, and in some sense, it, even though it requires all the same parenting things that we deal with, in another sense, it's really different from a lot of parenting situations. Did you seek outside help, resources? How did you reach out for help to know how to properly navigate this?
I'm really grateful that we live in a time where there's internet. You know, like that's been so helpful to be able to, you know, just pull up lists of resources so that I feel less isolated in that way. There is an organization called Gender Spectrum, and they're right here in the Bay, and they have so many things that they do. They have a conference every year. I think it's 3 or 4 days, and they cover everything, you know, from like the legal aspects of, you know, transitioning or, you know, gender nonconforming living. and education and the medical part of it, and they have speakers. And so people were coming from all over to get this information from them, and they're so supportive and so resourceful.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much, Ami, for coming to talk with us, and we just wish you and your family the best of luck.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some considered taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out their recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, time for recommendations. Allison, what do you have?
My recommendation is go to Iceland with your kids. I think I'm supposed to be like a little bit embarrassed to have just gone to Iceland because it's so like it's really popular,
trendy
tourist
now.
Destination. Yeah, yeah, there was like a Deadspin post last year that the headline was, "Oh, you went to Iceland? Amazing." We went to Iceland this summer, like a month ago, and it was, in fact, amazing. And the thing I loved the most about it, well, you guys, your kids are older, so maybe this doesn't feel as much of an issue to you, but so many of the trips we take to them, to take with our kids, are like really geared toward them, targeted at them, mm-hmm. and which is great and fun for them, but it was pretty awesome to do all this active stuff with three young boys, and none of it was really geared toward them, and they loved it. And this is somewhat related, but like even the touristy stuff we did, like when you go, there's like a place where you can go down into a volcano. I don't think like Icelandic people are doing that. Like obviously that's a touristy thing to do, but yeah. You hike a couple miles to this volcano, and then you get on this like metal platform, and you lower down into, they lower you down to the volcano, and you like see the volcano, and then you come back up and you hike a couple more miles back, and then there's like hot chocolate and soup, and that's it. There's no like gift shop or, you know, like performance or whatever. And it was just a really fun way to travel. And it was nice to see that, like, even having a bunch of kids, we could do something like this. So that's my real recommendation. But if you aren't in the market for a big trip, because, you know, I'm normally not either, then I wanted to recommend Castle by David McCauley, which is actually, my husband loved this book growing up and he's been reading it to our kids. So this is more his recommendation than mine, but it's basically just like this gorgeous book of extremely detailed pen and ink architectural illustrations. And the narrative is just like detailing how this fictitious Lord's castle is built. It's part of a series. It's also like there's a cathedrals one, city, pyramid, mill. But Castle is the only one we've read, and it's cool. That's it.
Love it. Ami, okay. What do you have?
Well, I got to go see Wonder Woman. Uh-huh. With the kids, uh-huh. And it was amazing. I loved it. Loved every minute of it. The fight scenes are so intense, and I love the training of the Amazonians. Like, they are so badass.
Yes.
So badass. Like, if I would have seen that as a kid, I don't know. I think I would have carried a sword everywhere.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, we had the exact same response to it. We were amazed and transfixed as a family when we saw it. Mm-hmm. And it really just highlighted how, as a boy, you get to see like guy superheroes all the time. It's just taken for granted that that's a thing. And yeah.
Totally.
It meant a lot to our family to see that. Good recommendation. All right, I'm going to go back in the Wayback Machine to something my kids are way too old for now. But for some reason, we loved this book when we were all younger. It's called The Boy, the Baird, the Baron, and the Bard.
Hmm.
It's a picture book with no text. And the story is that a child is visiting the Globe Theater and he goes through a curtain and is magically transported back in time and suddenly has to like navigate this whole world. And his best friend is a bear, presumably the bear from Nerd Alert Glasses, presumably the bear from The Winter's Tale, who is introduced with the stage direction exit pursued by bear, which some people know about. And so this boy becomes friends with this bear, and then he and this bear have to run from like the evil baron. But the best thing about this book is that there's no text, and so we just get to describe each page and each picture, each panel to the kids, and then as they got older, they began to describe it. And so it's this really interesting mix of reading a story and creating one. And I now realize that that's why it was so popular in our house when our kids were, I'm going to say, between 3 and 6. This was one of our favorite books to go back to. So it's called The Boy, The Bear, The Baron, and The Bard. And you can get it on Amazon.
That is a great recommendation. And also, like, I feel like my nightmare book. Like, those books where you have to just fill in the story on your own when you're just trying to, like, pass the time until bedtime. That's not for me.
I think that's accurate. All right, Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Benjamin Frisch. The homepage for the show is slate.com/momanddad. If you have a question you'd like to ask us on air, then leave us a message at 424-255-7833. You can also join us on Facebook at facebook.com/momanddadarefighting. For Allison Benedict and Ami Cooper, I'm Carvel Wallace, and we'll see you next week.